Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
Good morning. I'm Dan Glasser.
Dan and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We have offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston. And we're here every weekend, not literally Dan and I. That would be taxing on us, given that we have so many kids. But we're here every weekend to talk about estate planning, elder law, wills, trusts, everything you can think of in that area. We're happy to take your calls, and you could be our first caller by calling 518-476-5900. And occasionally, Dan, we take calls on real estate, and that would be wonderful since I think you know something about it.
I know a little bit about real estate, so yes, if there are any listeners out there that have questions about the process of buying or selling, I'd be happy to talk to them about that.
And Dan, that's not just a hobby of yours, right? That's what you do. So tell us what you do, if you don't mind.
23/7. So I represent buyers and sellers in all the offices that we practice. So Kingston, Saratoga, Albany, Clifton Park, and all the surrounding areas, guiding them from contract signing all the way to the closing, talking about all the ancillaries that go along with it. Explaining the documents. You know, there are some attorneys out there that shove papers in front of the clients, and I know this because I see it at closings with other attorneys. They throw papers in front of them and say, oh, just sign it. And they have no idea what they're signing. I did have one closing a few months ago. The attorney said, just trust me, I'm an attorney. Just sign it.
And so that obviously they just trusted them and signed, and it must have been a five-minute closing then.
So I like to laugh, so I laughed.
Dave and Dan?
Yeah.
We have our first caller. We have Bess.
Goodness.
Bess in Albany.
Good morning, Bess.
Hello.
How are you?
Yes. Fine, thank you.
What can we do?
I have an annuity, and I would like to make different organizations and charities the beneficiary of my annuity when I pass away. Mm-hmm. But I'm having a difficulty getting the identification number, the tax identification numbers, to give to my annuity holder, my financial advisor. How do I go about doing that? I have tried email, and they do not respond. I look up the correct addresses and sometimes even attention to a particular person, and I have not had any responses.
Okay. Well, so first of all, thanks for calling, and thank you for thinking about different organizations to leave money to. That's wonderful that you're thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
These organizations, I assume, are recognized as being charitable organizations. They're called 501c3 organizations.
Alzheimer's related. Nothing obscure.
And so a lot of times on their websites, they'll have some information for people who would like to leave bequests to their organizations and wording that may be appropriate and so on. But these entities, in order for them to be considered charities, they're public. And so there's information about them that's public as well. And I would assume that we could probably track down those EIN numbers for you.
Yeah.
However,
mm-hmm.
rather than chancing it and guessing and finding a number online saying, well, I guess this might work, I think what you're doing is the right thing. They may not be responding to emails as quickly now that there's so much COVID going on, and they may not be as fully staffed as you'd think. You may want to call, okay, if you haven't. Certainly the company that is holding your annuity, if I assume there's some sort of representative that you either know or was assigned to you, you could give them mm-hmm. a little bit of homework and ask them to help you as well to track mm-hmm. down the proper ID for those forms. I know that when you list a beneficiary on an annuity, right, they're asking for more than just a name, right?
Right, yes. Mm-hmm. And would a hard copy letter maybe be another way to try?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and anything uh-huh. can work. It's just curious because a lot of times, all the time, these organizations run on wonderful people like you leaving money or people during their lives donating money, and, mm-hmm. and they usually go out of their way to make it easy for that to happen. But if you want offline, or you could email Herzog, their info, so info at herzoglaw.com, and we're happy mm-hmm. to have someone take a look and see if we can get those numbers for you just as a courtesy to you. But I think if you keep trying, you'll end up getting it as well. It should be public information out there.
All right. Thank you very much for your help.
No problem. Thanks for the call. So, Dan, you were saying before, Bess's wonderful call there, about real estate. And, you know, our worlds aren't so different, you know. There are attorneys out there that'll give someone a will and say, yeah, you just sign at the second to last page, which seems odd considering it's your will. But there's also an area where what we do kind of comes together, right? A lot of our clients on the estate planning side or on the elder law side own real estate, and they got to figure out what to do with it. We have trusts that are buying or selling real estate. We have estates that usually are selling because at that point someone has passed away. But before we get to that, I wanted to pick your brain. You know, you're not on the radio all the time, and we have so many existing clients, so many listeners who are not clients, but they just like hearing us. How has this past year gone? Because I could say to everyone, in terms of estate planning, events that remind people that we're all mortal are usually things that lead to people calling our office to create wills and trusts and so on, right? How is the real? I've heard the real estate market was hot. How was 2020?
Real estate wise, it was the busiest market that I have ever seen. Of course, the first quarter, you know, as people started learning about COVID and it was pretty slow, and then April hit, and then there was some fear about what's going on, so it was, cause for some concern. And then, for some reason, the market exploded. Rates were low. They are still low. Inventory is, I think, at an all-time low, so you're still seeing lots of multiple offers as soon as a property goes on the market. Properties, if they're priced right, they're not staying on the market that long.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are paying cash. You know, I see a lot of people from New York City area that want to get out.
I was going to ask you, Dan. So I've heard, I'm a simple man, okay? And if someone's going to buy a house and they live in the capital region or they live in the Hudson Valley and they're going to buy a new home, then they need to sell their existing home. And so if the market's great for them to sell their home, they still need to buy a home. And that home is going to be also more expensive because the market's so good for selling, right?
Right.
Unless people from out of town are coming in town, in which case then it's great to be a seller, and you could sell down in New York City, let's say, or Westchester or Long Island or Connecticut or where have you, somewhere that's a little more populated, and then come to this wonderful part of the world and actually buy a bigger home that's still propped up by a really good real estate market, but it's far less expensive than it is in the city.
Right. More bang for your buck.
Yeah. And so closings started to happen again because they had to. What kind of precautions were you taking? I kind of know the answer, but I want you to tell everyone else because I've seen you leave the office with gloves and masks and all that stuff. So how have you done a closing?
So I have done closings on the hood of a car. I've done them in the parking lot. This was when COVID started, last April and May, when closings were starting to ramp up again. Non-essential parties were not allowed to be present. Before COVID, we'd have family members, real estate agents that would attend the closings. That's no longer happening. oftentimes the sellers and the buyers are in different rooms. So it makes it seem like we're fighting, but we're not, you know, because we're separated. You know, we try to prep as much as we can before we sit down for the closing to minimize, you know, the time spent in one room together. You know, but like I said, I've had many closings in parking lots. And, of course, masks are required. I recommend gloves to all my clients, not everyone. I think I'm the only one that wears gloves. I wear them. I've been wearing them, you know, since March. Of course, I change them. You know, there's a lot of paperwork, and it's a lot of people touching the checks and the documents. So, you know, we try to take every precaution we can so that we're all safe and distant.
Well, I'm glad you do that. We take similar precautions here, and obviously masks are a must. But beyond that, normally clients that have come in, and if you're listening and you are a client that's recently come in, normally you're calling our office while you're in the parking lot to say you're here, and then we kind of make sure that your room is ready so we don't have people congregating in the lobbies and so on. You know, Dan, I also did signings in the parking lot, and it's a little difficult because a closing is not a short event. And the way you do your real estate closings, the way I do my document signings, the way Debbie, Jay Murray, Harry do their signings, we got to make sure the client knows what's going on, that they have the requisite capacity in the case of really any of these legal documents, but especially wills and trusts and powers of attorney. And it's not really made for hoods of cars. And you know, are they sitting in the car while you're on the hood of the car and now you're explaining for 45 minutes what the power of attorney does, going through it paragraph by paragraph? So what we've done, or at least when it was really bad, when we did have to do them outside, we would have hour-long phone calls with the clients prior to them signing, the day before, the night before, to go through everything like we normally would, kind of like a dry run. Nobody signs anything because we're on the phone. But that way, when they do come in, they are in their car. They'd have a bunch of stickies on their documents. We would have a much shorter ceremony and obviously gauge their capacity and so on. And when it was raining, you know, one building down from our Albany office, there was a kind of a parking garage. And I always would think to myself, if you ever told me that I'm going to kind of meet someone in a dark parking garage to have them sign their will, I'd say you're crazy, and apparently you're not crazy, because that's what we did for a couple months.
Yeah, I had a closing back in April. It was in the parking lot. It was flurrying. It's very cold, and my clients were in their car. I gave them the stack of documents, and we had a conversation prior to, and I explained all the documents to them. Like, this is a mortgage. This is a note. You know, they're standard documents, and they could tell that I was freezing. And, you know, do you want to, like, come in the car? It's like, no.
Well, that would defeat the purpose, though. Let's get everyone in the same car. Makes sense.
So what ended up happening is, because I couldn't feel my fingers anymore, I went back into my car, and we were FaceTiming. So I was explaining the documents to them over FaceTime, and everything was great. So we were safe. They were happy. And I didn't go in their car.
Well, hopefully the worst is behind us, Dan. I'm going to ask you about what you see for this coming year. As hopefully more and more people get vaccinated and COVID becomes less of an issue. We do have some webinars coming up, Dan, and we've been talking about you doing some webinars as well in the future. We do have our webinar Wednesdays beginning, this next Wednesday, January 13th at 10 a.m. I'll be doing a webinar on how to plan your estate. Seems like something right up my alley. And then at 2 p.m., I believe it might be Jay Marie or Debbie is doing a webinar on what to do when a loved one dies, equally relevant these days. If you want to register for our seminar, you can do a couple different things. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com, but you can actually register yourself with a couple clicks by going to herzoglaw.com to our seminar page and click on the webinar that meets your interests. And you can also call our office at 518-465-7581 and let us know where you want to go, and we'll register you. You could also call us to schedule an appointment or you know, pick Dan's brain about a real estate matter you're thinking about doing. In a week and a half, Dan, we have our webinar week, so the 18th through the 22nd. And for webinar weeks, what we do is every single day at 2 p.m., we do a different webinar ranging from aging in place to Q&A sessions, elder law, basics, the difference between wills and trusts and so on. And again, you could find all that information on our websites. I think it would be great to kind of blow out where real estate and estate planning intersect, Dan. So we should get cracking on one of those webinars.
I agree with you, Dave.
Yeah, I think even Ben would attend, and Ben doesn't attend any seminars.
I would go, absolutely.
Well, then there we go. We have one person, Dan. Hopefully we'll get two. We'll go from there. You could also be our second caller. Bess was fast out of the gate, one of the fastest callers I've seen. You can call us at 518-476-5900 to be our next caller. But Dan, it's 2021 now. It actually started a lot like 2020, maybe even scarier. We won't get into that. We're not getting into that at all. Stay safe out there, everybody. But what do you see this year in the real estate market?
I see good things. You know, I'm a positive person. I think the interest rates are low. So we're getting a lot of the same activity that we've had, for the past, 6-7 months is multiple offers, low interest rates, people moving up, upstate. So it's still a hot market. And I think as we creep into the spring and hopefully these numbers with COVID start dropping, I think the market will be pretty hot. I do have a crystal ball, by the way, and this is what I see. I see good things.
Good. There are parts of what you do that have been more affected than others, and whereas if there's a good market, you could still negotiate a contract and inspections could be scheduled and so on, and things kind of go the same way, same timeline. I've heard both through talking to you, but also with clients of ours who are trustees of trusts, who are executors of estates or just want to get rid of their own properties, that title is taking a long time. So without putting us all to sleep, which is a challenge right now, can you tell us what title insurance does and why it's important? And then if I could ask you, tell us why it's taking a really long time now.
Sure. So title insurance begins with a title search. So we can't issue a policy without checking all the records. So we have an agent that goes out to the county clerk's office, wherever the property is located, check all the records, make sure that the seller does in fact own the property that they are selling. We check to make sure that there are, if there are any judgments, liens, tax liens, foreclosures, bankruptcies, any kind of title glitch that's going to affect the marketability of title.
And Dan, when you say marketability of title, so we're talking about not even this purchase. We're talking about really what's your ability to sell this property in the future, and where it becomes it's not optional. It's a requirement when people are getting financing because the bank wants to make sure they're giving you money to buy a home that you actually own, and they want to make sure they're kind of first in line so that if you do sell it, they definitely get paid before anybody else, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So from that search, we prepare a title insurance policy that tells, you know, in that case, the lender, title's clear. Or if we have a mortgage, which is often the case, you know, the seller has a mortgage, we make sure that that gets paid at the closing. So if there are any title glitches, they can be satisfied at time of closing. You know, and then what happens sometimes is there's an issue that pops up that the seller knew nothing about. And this happens a lot. You know, there are judgments that come up against sellers, and then, because I always ask the client in the beginning when I have the seller, are you aware of any judgments, bankruptcies against you? They almost always say no, which is great. And then there's an issue. One client had a $20,000 judgment, and I said, hey, there's a problem. And he said, oh, yeah, that one. I didn't pay my credit card. I didn't know that that would affect me selling my house.
I could understand where they are coming from in having that assumption because, you know, a mortgage on a house, it's recorded against the house. So obviously that's a lien that comes up. If they have some sort of personal liability, you don't automatically think, well, this is something that's recorded against my house and will need to be dealt with at a closing. But, you know, the tax authorities and you know, property taxes and you know, creditors that have judgments on you, sometimes, you know, you'll hear people have wages garnished. Well, this is kind of a form of it, right? They're going to get a bite when you end up selling an asset. Like a house, so it's taking a lot longer these days of what I hear. And is that just COVID logistics?
Well, the searches are taking longer because exactly. So there's some offices have been hit with COVID, so they are shutting down, you know, for 1 or 2 weeks, and then we try to rely on online records. Also, you know, when title companies go into the clerk's offices, they have to make appointments. And there are limitations, so only so many people can be there at a time. And with the high volume of real estate that we have, you know, we have to wait. So I think I say it every day to clients, you know, waiting on title. There are delays, and I give them a heads up right away because some clients want to close in 2 weeks if they're paying cash and waiving inspections. And I said, well, there's not likely going to happen because of title.
And Dan, so if they're paying cash, then they don't have a lender. They're not borrowing money. So it's not like the lender's going to require it, but you will absolutely recommend it just to make sure. I know we've had mutual clients that have tried to proceed against your recommendations, and that can get pretty scary because if there are these liens, if there are these judgments, you're going to be in real trouble, right? Sometimes there's even litigation that may involve the property that can affect your ability to use the property. I know from my relatively small amount of real estate knowledge, and every now and then if I fill in on a closing, that some of the things that are signed at closings will make someone swear, the seller swear, there are no current leases, there are no tenants on the property, right, or there's no this or that. And that's to make sure that the buyer is not only buying the right thing and that the seller owns the thing, but also that there isn't going to be someone on the couch when you get there saying, hey, I just moved in and I'm paying, you know, $50 a month and I'll see you in 2 years.
Right.
That would be unfortunate.
That would be terrible. But I've had clients that want to forego a title search, and I won't do it. So I politely say I can't represent you if you're not going to at least get a title search. Right. Of course, I'm trying to protect them because I don't want them to have a problem if and when they ever sell the house.
Well, if they do, they're going to blame you anyway, right? So,
well, I'll get a call.
Well, thanks for giving us all kind of a postmortem on 2020 and a preview on 2021. I mentioned earlier that our worlds collide when it comes to planning. And one of the areas where there's the most misconceptions when it comes to estate planning is when it comes to property, particularly when trusts are involved. I obviously do a lot of planning, a lot of trusts, a lot of wills. And one of the things I say to all my clients, Dan, whenever they're doing a trust and we're putting a house into the trust is you are still responsible for all the bills of the house. You're still responsible for taxes and insurance. And you also have exclusive use of the property. And they say, well, that sounds like I own it. And I say, yeah, because that's like a legal life use that you have. And what comes with that legal life use is deductions if it's rental properties and star exemptions if it's your primary residence and any other things that apply. In general, life is the same if you happen to put a property in a trust. And the question they ask every single time is, well, what if I want to sell the house? So let me ask you, Dan, and then I'll correct you if you're wrong. What do I do if I want to sell the house?
It's pretty much not that different from, you know, regular Dan and Taylor selling a house. We have, you know, documents that need to be provided to the title company. You know, if mm-hmm. there's a trust selling, the trustee is the one signing all the documents. There are documents that say the trust is still in full force and effect. These are documents that the title company will require.
Well, that's the correct answer, Dan, and that is about it because it's the same thing. It's really easy to sell. Now, one of the things that is a little different is, remember, the trust owns the property. So the person who signs the deed to sell that property to someone else, right, outside the trust, right, that the signatory of the deed is the trustee. It's not going to be you anymore because you technically don't own your house, right? Your trust owns it. Who's the signer of the trust? Well, if it's a revocable trust, it might be you. You might be the trustee. If it's a Medicaid asset protection trust, it's going to be someone else, your kid, your friend, what have you. And then you still have that life use, so you're signing off on the house being sold. The trustee can't just sell the house. The buyer wants to make sure that the legal life use owner, if I made up a phrase there, agrees to sell the house. Because again, if you're buying, you don't want to say, "Well, I'm buying it, but the creator of the trust is still in the house. I don't get it. Right? I thought the trust just sold it to me." Well, not quite. So maybe a form or two extra, but the process is the same. And it was my understanding also, Dan, that there's a property disclosure that a trust may not have to fill out if they're selling a piece of property.
Well, this is exciting. I got a question right. You're correct. We're on fire. So there is a property condition disclosure statement that New York State requires every seller complete. It's 48 questions. It's about, like, the nuts and bolts of the house, how long you've been there. Does anyone else have a right to use the property? Are there any issues with the foundation, the roof, things like that? And there are exceptions. And one of those exceptions to filling that out is if the property is coming from a trust. And also, as regular old, you know, Sally and John can refuse to fill out a property condition disclosure, but they would be required to give a credit to the buyer at the closing of $500. So clients that, you know, they have their reasons they don't want to fill it out. They're afraid of being sued a year from now because, you know, they're going to be accused of making a misrepresentation on that statement.
Well, they don't want to tell anyone about the cemetery that's buried underneath the basement or something like that, I guess. Yeah.
Gentlemen, we are at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for.
Options available for Medicaid planning and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston.
Our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back. Good morning. I'm Dave Kabikian.
Good morning. I'm Dan Glasser.
Dan and I are two of the attorneys at Herzog Law Firm, and we've been spending the first half hour of the show talking a lot about what Dan does. Dan is a real estate attorney extraordinaire. That's what his business card says. It actually says the word extraordinaire, which is a little odd, Dan, I must say.
It does. So.
And Dan was letting us know kind of what the world's been like in the area of real estate law in 2020 because of COVID. Dan, it's been quite interesting, hasn't it?
It has been.
At the tail end of the first half hour, we were talking about trusts, owning pieces of property, and then the questions that everyone asks, what if I don't want to live in my house anymore? Am I stuck with this trust and the house? That's the trust, of course not. The house can be sold. It's sold at the wishes of the creator of the trust, or we call him the settlor or the grantor of the trust, and they can get rid of it. If you don't want to live in your house anymore, you tell your trustee to sell it. You control all the mechanisms of it. It doesn't get sold without you, frankly. At the closing, Dan, you were saying how the trustee sells the deed, and there's a couple nuanced points to what forms may need or may not need to be signed at a closing because the seller is a trust as opposed to, who'd you say, Carol and John? Are those the names you use? Sally? Sally and John?
John or Dan and Sally, Taylor.
Dan and Taylor, Sally and John. The proceeds of the sale, this is where I get excited, Dan. The whole point of the trust, especially the asset protection trust, the Medicaid trust, is to protect assets. Obviously, it's also a couple other things, right? We want to avoid probate. We want to control everything and still be the boss, like Tony Danza. But when it comes to the proceeds that we want to protect, okay, that when you start a trust and we put a piece of property into the trust, Dan, we're not actually putting a house in. I mean, we are, but what we're putting in is equity that the house represents. So if someone has a paid off home worth $300,000, if they create a trust and they transfer a $300,000 home to the trust now has a $300,000 home. Are you still with me, Dan?
I'm right behind you.
Gentlemen, okay. Yes. I'd like to step in here for just a second. We have a caller on the line. We have Karina in Albany.
Good morning, Karina. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. My question is, when my parents passed away, they had a nice house which needed to be fixed up. Now, the person that was in charge of it was in the family, law guardian. Do they have to fix it up and get it for the maximum amount that it needs to be sold for, or can they just poo-poo it and let a flipper take it and say, here, I'm selling this house for you for $100,000, even though the neighborhood is really high-scale property value. What is the law guardian's responsibility to the beneficiaries when they know that they could have gotten more in the end once the parents died? And also tax returns. Do the beneficiaries have the right to know about past tax returns that were not completed when the parents died and if they got anything back from that?
So this is a really big question here, Karina, and a very good one. I'm going to correct you on one thing or clarify something for myself. So you said law guardian twice. Do you mean like a trustee or executor?
Well, basically what happened was my mother was incapacitated. She had dementia. Mm-hmm. So there was like the court had to decide of the children which child would be the law guardian. And this person was a person that I was never really in contact with my mother that much. And I felt that something's going on because I feel that this house is worth a lot of money. And now I look at it and I cannot believe what it looks like. And I don't understand why they didn't fix it up and keep the money in the whole family for them to receive it. And this is what I'm getting at. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
No, it does. So then the next question is, did the property get sold while she was still alive?
Yes.
Okay, so now it makes sense because so a guardian was appointed by the court. There's something called a guardianship proceeding that we sometimes will talk about. So that guardian is now mom. Okay, they legally have the rights that mom did. They can transact for mom. It's essentially like a power of attorney, except the court, the state of New York, is giving powers to someone else and taking away powers from mom, as opposed to a power of attorney where mom keeps powers. So the job of that fiduciary, that guardian, is not that different than a trustee or executor. The idea is that you're supposed to get and maximize the value of assets in general. And that doesn't mean you have to get top dollar necessarily, because as Dan will tell you, if you're holding out on getting top dollar in a house, until it sells, you might be paying the upkeep and the taxes and the insurance, and that may eat at, you know, you're kind of spending money every month just to get a little more money. It defeats its purpose. So
right.
The obligations of this guardian aren't to get the best price possible, but at the same time, they shouldn't be getting the lowest price possible. And the way you can figure this out, right, I don't need this guardian to be a real estate expert. I don't need them to study Zillow.com and to figure out and look at public records to see what things sell for. They could simply hire a real estate agent, right? A broker who knows the market, who would be able to list it and go from there. And the free market, right? Fair market value, how much is something worth? If I ask Dan, how much is your house worth? It's not what you think, Dan. It's what someone's willing to pay for it. And so when a house gets listed, right, and what I think should have happened by the guardian is to list the home. So that way, if someone like you, Karina, called a radio show and you said, I don't think it was sold for enough, right, they could say, well, that's great, but you weren't willing to buy it for more, and we put it on the market, and the only bidder was this person, right? So I don't know the exact facts of how they got to sell it to this particular person who's flipping it or doing this or doing that, but in terms of your question, do you have recourse or can you get answers? Yeah, you can. The guardian is supervised by the courts. They file accountings with the courts at the end of mom's life. They're going to file a final accounting to show what went into the what was governed by the guardian, what they started with, what they ended with. And if there's an issue as to the value of something, sure, you can have your day to say, no, I looked at the comps, and it should have been listed for sale. This should have happened. That should have happened. Okay? So that kind of answers that question. In terms of the tax returns, similar story, where you have a right to know what mom had or mom has, and if she's entitled to tax refunds. Theoretically, you could know that. Really, we want to focus on the period of time that the guardian is guardian. Okay, so.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it went back like 4 years. That's what was going on. So I knew because I was the person like taking care of them. And so, you know, so I knew that it went back several years. But in the accountings that I received, I didn't see anything mentioned to that. But yet, the accountings were incomplete. There was only 2 years of accountings, and he was in charge of her for 3 or 4 years. And I thought the accountings had to be completed by May. So May of this year has already passed.
May of 2020, yes, of course. So, we're getting kind of into details now, Karina, so I can't tell you one way or another something sounds right or doesn't sound right. You're more than welcome to call our office and schedule a time to meet and bring in everything you got, and we could kind of work our way through it and figure out if something smells wrong or not.
How long do you have to, like, there's other monies that, like, he owed me for care of my mother. How do I get reimbursed for that? Like, is it already too late since she passed?
So how long ago did she pass?
Last year.
So
I sent him the paperwork, but he didn't respond.
Right. So if you kind of, I wish I had a blackboard in front of you and me and everyone listening. So the guardian is guardian until the person they're guardian for is no longer alive. So when mom passed away, there's a final report that the guardian's going to file. And then from that point on, mom's got an estate, right? And there might be an estate accounting. And if mom passed away owing you money and you can show that, well, then you're a creditor of mom's estate. And so that goes in an entirely different direction. But there's also recourse you have there, as does any creditor of an estate. Karina, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Dan, sorry I didn't let you chime in there. I know you were chomping at the bit to say something.
I'll let it go, Dave. Okay.
Karina brought up a lot of really important points, and I know we were talking about real estate, but if I can, just for a moment, Dan, in general, right, we want people to have powers of attorney. We want to avoid guardians, even though it may be the same people with the same responsibilities. We want to make sure that expensive process isn't one that needs to be had. The job of the guardian, job of a trustee, job of executor, everyone always thinks or gets upset if one of their siblings is executor and they're not, or why'd you pick, my brother as trustee, why didn't you pick me? It's not a very fun job, Dan, right? There's lots of potential exposure. You got to be doing everything perfectly, and you may have siblings or other family members or other people who don't like what you did. And you may be a trustee or an executor or a guardian that says, hey, you know what? This house is a headache. Let me get rid of it. I'm going to sell it for $100,000 because that's really fast. Cash buyer, right? No title search and everything goes perfect, right? Real quick. But someone may be upset because they thought you should get $50,000 more for that home. So kind of a cautionary tale that Karina brought up. Hopefully everything works out for her. But those things are not uncommon, and I've been on both sides of it, where I'm fighting for a client or I'm defending a trustee or a guardian because of a real estate transaction specifically.
Why can't we all just get along, Dave?
That's what I'm saying, Dan. That's what I'm saying. We do have some webinars coming up, Dan. I could read your mind. I know you were thinking, are there webinars coming up? Yes, there are, Dan. This Wednesday, our webinar Wednesday, we have a 10 a.m. and a 2 p.m. webinar. The 10 a.m. is called How to Plan Your Estate, where you learn how to plan your estate. The 2 p.m. is called What to Do When a Loved One Dies, where we talk about what to do when a loved one dies. You can register at our webinars by going to our website, herzoglaw.com, and going to the seminar page. You can email us at info@herzoglaw.com or call the office at 518-465-7581. If those times don't work or you don't like the topics, fear not, because you could go to our blog page and actually look at our on-demand webinars. Pretty much every webinar we've done is recorded, or at least one version of it, and it might be Harry or Debbie or Jamie or myself or in the future Dan. And you can get all your knowledge or share the videos, which would be wonderful as well. Dan, you still there? Okay, good. The other place where our worlds collide, we were talking about property and trust. We're in the, for the most part, North Country or even Upper Hudson Valley, lots of lakes, lots of rivers, lots of second homes and camps and cabins and three-season rooms and lake houses and lots of stuff really important real estate that people, and sentimental, not just valuable, but also sentimental, lots of memories with kids and grandkids and so on. And I have a lot of clients that will want to not only put a property in trust, but also, and not only protect the value that the house represents. I talked about earlier how when you put something into a trust, you're putting $300,000 of value in, and if that house sells, well, the proceeds of the sale stays in the trust to keep that value. It's not just about protecting value. They want to make sure that if, you know, their kids are fighting, that all branches of the family get to use the camp when they're long gone. People aren't fighting over who gets to be at the house for 4th of July or Memorial Day weekend. How to pay bills when it comes to vacation properties. One sibling lives in Georgia, the other one lives and pretty much goes to the lake house every weekend. Who's responsible for the bills? Is it 50-50 or not? And we could actually explore all of those things. Do you do a lot of real estate where it's someone's second home, or people are buying a second home or a camp?
Lately, yes. There are people from downstate that want to buy, they're calling it a getaway home.
You know, a pied de terre or something like that? I think that's what the French call a je ne sais quoi.
My son takes French in school. I don't, so I'm not familiar with that. But, yeah, second homes, getaway homes, to escape, everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them are actually kind of, I don't want to say off the grid, but they may have underground fuel and so on. Does that complicate things at all when it comes to inspections and so on?
Well, it's a point of discussion. If there are any tanks underground, you know, we ask for service records. The biggest issue would be if there is an unused fuel tank underground, that needs to be removed. And if there is, in that property condition disclosure form I mentioned earlier, there's a question, I believe it's question 14, that talks about the fuel tank. So if I see that and there was a tank and someone removed it, we would want to see proof of that it was removed, how it was removed. You know, there's environmental concerns, of course, that it was done according to protocol.
Gotcha.
Dave and Dan?
Yes.
We have our next caller. We have Sue in Ballston Spa.
Hey, Sue. Good morning. I have a revocable trust. I have the house in the trust. And I guess my general question is, when I pass, and I do have co-trustees, what do you need to hire an attorney outside of your firm that would collect assets and things?
So, Sue, thanks for the question. Hang on here, okay? So don't hang up. So hopefully, number one, we're not answering this question in reality for a really long time. So literally don't go anywhere, okay? But number two, upon your passing, right, that usually will signify the beginning of the end of your trust, right? You're no longer around to change the beneficiaries. You can't amend the trust anymore because you don't exist anymore. So it's kind of a line in the sand. So then the trustees, the remaining trustees, or if anyone jumps up to take your spot, if there's a backup that would come up as well, are going to figure out what to do with the real estate subject to the terms of your trust. If your trust says hold this property for, you know, for the next 30 years as follows, well, that's what they're going to do, and that's kind of what we were talking about before your call. But in terms of collecting assets and selling property, yes, we would advise you to meet with an attorney. We happen to do all these things, and Dan obviously does all the real estate. So your question was more unique, which is, do you have to go outside our firm? And I'm tempted to say, no, you do not, because we could handle everything. But I would say when there is a death, okay, or even a large change in life, attorneys should be involved at least to tell you what to do or not to do, or what your loved ones or remaining trustees should do or not do, including collecting assets, including paying creditors, and then distributing assets based on the terms of your revocable trust. Did you have a specific question about that home being sold?
No, not necessarily. My concern was that, I set up a revocable trust with with you, your firm, and my concern is that I was with the understanding that it would be my co-trustee's responsibility to collect the assets, not you.
Correct, right. We would just guide them, and they would, if they wanted to hire our firm to help with that, just like if they decided to sell the house one day, they could decide to meet with Dan and hire Dan to walk them through the transaction all the way through closing. Our firm won't do that legwork. That's literally the role of the trustee. And when you do look at your trust the next time, probably paragraph 2.3 of your revocable trust says what happens when you're not here anymore. And it'll say after, you know, the trustees have, paid all bills and so on and so forth, they're to do as follows. They're supposed to transfer assets to these following beneficiaries. Now, I don't know your last name. I don't want to hear it on the radio. I don't know what's in your trust, right? I could look it up if I knew, right? But inevitably, there are things that are not in your trust. So there, it may be an executor or maybe the same trustee to say, all right, what are we doing with the personal property in the house? What are we doing here or there? And what assets you have outside the trust and how you own them will get us to answer the question, do we need to probate a will? Do we not? Ideally, the answer is not, that there's nothing to do or very little to do, because when clients do a revocable trust or the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust, at a minimum, we want you to avoid probate. What we do at Herzog is when someone passes away, and we find out, we'll contact the next of kin and say, why don't you come on in, bring everything you got in terms of finances and so on. We'll share with you what we know about the client, you know, what assets you did have, and together we kind of figure out what's left to be done. Sometimes the trustees can do it all by themselves. Sometimes they'll retain Herzog to either help them, or Dan to help them with the real estate, or one of our attorneys to help with guiding through a trust administration or a trust termination. But it just depends on how complicated the fact pattern is. A lot of times people can do it on their own, and that's kind of the reason why they did a trust, to make things really easy on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't find things so easy anymore. But
let me ask you a question, too. When's the last time you came into the office or spoke to someone?
I came into the Saratoga office probably 2019.
Okay, so fairly recently. You're one of our clients.
I set this up in 2017, okay. I think.
Okay. Well, you're entitled to, whenever you want, call us and have us explain your documents to you again and make sure that you understand what happens at these different stages. And we're happy to do that with no cost to you, obviously. You're our client. And so at a minimum, call us crazy. We want you to know your own documents. And I want you to be able to explain it to Dan, who may not know your documents one day. So that's how well I want you to know it.
So how do you get in touch with Dan who?
Dan who? It's Dan Glasser.
No,
and Dan,
I couldn't hear it in the beginning.
Yeah,
okay.
Dan Glasser, and Dan does real estate law, and it may be premature for you to talk to him about your trust or your home unless you're planning on selling the home, but certainly I'm sure he would love to talk to you.
I would.
But so you can just call our office.
How would you get in touch?
Yep. So you'd call our office at 518-465-7581. And
call you and to get.
Dan
connection.
Dan Herzog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call, Sue. Another great caller, Dan. Three in a row.
Wow.
I know.
Put some butter on us. We're on a roll.
So, Dan, we have a couple minutes here. Slowly, the beautiful music's going to start to play. Could I ask you to just kind of bullet point a couple things that we talked about before? If there were, three or four things you really want people to remember about real estate transactions, lay it on me.
You have to stretch, all right? So you got to be flexible. See what I did there? You have to have patience. There is nothing that we can do about delays with title searches. It is what it is. I can ask the title company to push it along. They get that request 100 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're planning your move, try to be, like I said, be flexible. If you just signed a contract and your closing date in the contract says it's on or about March 15th, do not hire movers for March 15th, because the chances of you closing on that date are very slim. And plan accordingly. Have a backup plan. We just got hit with 3 feet of snow. That threw off a lot of plans for clients that were supposed to move.
Dan, if someone out there, client or non-client, is thinking about selling their home in 2021, they heard they missed this hot market and they don't want to miss the next one that might be this spring, what things could they do now in January and February to plan for something they do in March or April?
I think the biggest thing that they could do and should do is have an inspection called the pre-listing inspection. So it's essentially a home inspection that a buyer would do under contract, but now the seller is going to do it so that they're aware of the condition of their home. If there are any substantial defects, they can be addressed now. And these are issues that the seller may not know about, because let's face it, how often do we go into our own attics? I don't.
Very, very true. Dan, I hear the music. Thank you for spending a Saturday morning with us. Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.